Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I've got the coolest guest for us, you guys. This is Dr. Nancy Kay. She is a veterinarian and author, and she works with people at AVMA and around the country talking about the importance of working with responsible breeders. Yay!
I sure do.
A vet in our corner, y'all. This is fantastic. All right, you guys. As a breeder, you're passionate about setting up each puppy for success, whether that's in the ring or at home. While puppies can be vulnerable to unexpected accidents and illnesses, you can help ensure that they have access to high-quality care when they need it with Trupanion, medical insurance for pets. Trupanion created their breeder support program with responsible breeders in mind, so you're able to send each litter home with a special offer for immediate pet medical insurance coverage. When your buyers take advantage of this offer, their puppy receives coverage against whatever life may throw their way, from an upset tummy to a broken leg and everything in between, Trupanion can help. As a member of Trupanion's free breeder support program, you'll also receive access to more special perks, including comprehensive litter health insights, educational resources to share with your buyers, and more. So sign up today at Trupanion.com/Pure Dog Talk. Trupanion is underwritten in Canada by Accelerant Insurance Company of Canada, or GPIC Insurance Company, and in the United States by American Pet Insurance Company, or ZPIC Insurance Company. Welcome, Dr. K. I'm so happy to have you here and look forward to this conversation. You just have a new book out. So this is like kind of the peg that we're hanging this on, but there's a bigger conversation here. And your new book is A Dog Named 647. Did I get that right?
You sure did.
Tell us the story of that book, because I think it's going to be applicable to our conversation today.
Sure thing. Well, this is about puppy mills. I saw my first puppy mill dogs, puppies, as a practicing veterinarian. And these were puppies that came in with some sort of birth defect or infectious illness. And these people who had already fallen in love with this puppy are now bringing it to my doorstep. Mm-hmm. And they're devastated. We sometimes can. We sometimes cannot fix the puppy. Mm-hmm. Of course, the puppy mills offer a replacement guarantee. But once these people realize where their puppy came from, they're not going to send this little sweet thing back to the puppy mill. So it became my passion to speak out against puppy mills. I've been disappointed in what our generations, the adult generations, have done to put an end to puppy mills, or at least slow them the heck down. And so I thought, I'm going to write a book for middle grade kids. Mm. These are kids with a burgeoning awareness of the world around them and the social issues in the world around them. As you know from my past books, I'm a nonfiction writer. I've been a nonfiction writer. And I tried to write a nonfiction book about puppy mills for these eighth graders, middle graders. Mm. And I looked at these revisions, and I kept mm-hmm. saying to myself, if I were a middle grader, there's no way I would read this book. Right. So I thought, I'm going to have to convey this in fiction. And I learned all about the craft of fiction. Mm-hmm. Worked with book critique groups. And every time I felt like I wanted to give up, you know, one more revision, I just pictured the looks on the dogs' faces when I went into puppy mills. I went undercover into several puppy mills, into a dog auction, and I pictured the looks on those dogs' faces, and I just kept writing. And the result has been great. It's been really well received.
As my understanding, you contrast this with responsible breeders, people like my audience,
yes.
that this is where you want to go for your,
yes. Exactly. And it's such a clear-cut contrast. And it's really so simple. We just need to educate people about the simplicity of it and what they can do. There's just two steps to take. There's a lot to consider. I mean, there's a lot between puppy mills and responsible breeders. So there's a lot to consider when trying to find a responsible breeder, but staying away from puppy mills is easy if you know the two tricks.
And what are your two tricks?
Never buy a puppy from a pet store. 95% of those puppies are sourced from puppy mills. And never, ever buy a puppy without seeing the kennel and meeting the mama dog.
Yep. Yep. That'll do it. That'll get you all the way down the road. I mean, you know.
Absolutely. Puppy mills won't allow visitors because they just have too much to hide. Now, that being said, if you've worked with a responsible breeder, do you have to go meet the new mama dog, go see the kennel again? No, you know the breeder and the breeder knows you.
And so as a practicing veterinarian, I mean, obviously as an author, but as a practicing veterinarian, talk about the way you talk to your clients about helping them find a responsible breeder. Because I think that's a really, really fascinating part of the conversation.
Sure. And before that, and we can go back to that, is how you choose which breed to get, of course.
Oh, yes. That's always, always an important part of the conversation.
So if you're speaking with a breeder over the phone or online, here are the things I recommend looking for. First and foremost, the breeder insists that you come visit. They want you there. It's not necessarily about looking at their dogs, but that breeder wants to size you up. Mm-hmm. They're not willing to sell one of their puppies to just anyone. Mm-hmm. They'll have more questions for you than you actually have for them. So once you're there, the breeder will speak very highly about her breed. I'm going to say she, but it could be she or he.
Yeah.
She's passionate about the breed that she adores, and she wants to enhance the breed through future breeding. Mm-hmm. So she'll tell you all about the breed. She'll talk to you about all the health issues that the breed is at risk for. She'll show you all the health clearances on the mama dog and the sire, as well as probably the aunts and the uncles and the grandparents.
Yes.
She'll ask you to sign a contract. Mm-hmm. And most responsible breeders, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong on this, part of the contract is if you ever need to rehome this puppy, I'm the first one you call. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
And I think that's something that, you know, I do a lot of talks like vet students and stuff, helping people understand that are not in the dog breeding world, why there is a difference between a responsible breeder and somebody else. And one of them is that, like, my dogs don't wind up in the shelter. I am not at a rescue pet. No, they just don't because they sign a contract that says it has to come back to me. And they're microchipped before they leave, and my name stays as the first place on that microchip.
That's great.
And that is honestly getting to be more and more common amongst not just that they're microchipped, but people staying on because we've run into problems. And when the animal goes into a rescue and the rescue says, well, you can't have it back, I'm like, my dog, microchip says so. You have to give it back to me.
Exactly. Yeah. When you sign on with a responsible breeder, you're kind of becoming part of her family.
You are 100% part
and
of my family.
She's going to want to keep tabs on your pup. If your pup develops a health issue, she's going to want to be the first one to know about it.
Yeah.
Second in line to your veterinarian.
Yeah.
Because if there's a problem, she wants to know about it. She'll question the breeding. But the breeding
it absolutely makes decisions. If there's something serious, even if there's something relatively minor, I want to know because that tells me that didn't work or I don't want to go that direction again or, you know, all the kind of things.
Absolutely.
It's all part of the information. And so,
especially with breeds that have malignancies that tend to be inherited, as a breeder, you really want to know who's popping up with that and who's not. Yeah.
It's the only way. I mean, it is such an important relationship, the breeder and the puppy buyer. And see, I always say, and the veterinarian, the puppy buyer's veterinarian, because if there's something wrong with the puppy and your client brings it into you and you say, have you talked to the breeder? And they call me and I'm like, oh my God, you know, this one's such and such grandmother had this thing. Try looking for that. And it can shorten the amount of time you have to put in as a veterinarian.
Absolutely.
To knowing what's going on with this dog.
Right. It's a team. Mm-hmm. It's really a team. Something else that I was going to mention, and I might get into trouble for this. You tell me if I'm wrong. Breeders are passionate about one or two breeds. It would be very unusual for them to be breeding 3, 4, 5.
Pretty uncommon. Yeah. I mean, there's a few people that are just, I have friends that are like rare spaniels. So, you know, they're really deep.
Oh, yes.
Right. And they invest billions of dollars into this. But generally speaking, most of us can manage one at a time at best.
Right. And you know, a puppy mill website where when you look at their puppies, it's going to be like a high school yearbook where there's literally dozens of photos of puppies. I think most breeders, depending on the number of dogs that they have, they would breed their dog once every couple of years.
Generally, maybe once a year is pretty normal. Yeah. Once a year. Yeah. If you're really able to do it, you know, if you can get 2 litters a year, you got a couple different bitches. The thing about making great dogs is you can't do it if you never breed them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Generally speaking, when, you know, and if you have a toy breed, like Chihuahuas that have 2 puppies, you might have 6 litters in a year.
Right.
Because, you know, you've got 2 puppies to sell. Like, that's not getting you anywhere. Right.
And most responsible breeders don't want to mix it up with another breed. They don't want to produce a hybrid dog like all the doodles that we see running around.
Yeah.
By the way, the vast majority of doodles come right out of puppy mills who are very opportunistic and latch on to the fads. But I think it's unusual for a responsible breeder to want to create a doodle dog.
Yeah. No, I know there are people within the doodle community who are trying really hard, but I think they are pretty much not the run of the mill. How's that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the minority, for sure the minority.
I would think. Yeah. I know a few, and I know that there are people that are trying. Okay. God bless you. But I think that responsible breeding is important, no matter what. And I think that being there for the puppy buyers, being there for the puppies, the animals and the people, that's the whole ball of wax. And so you as a veterinarian, having that understanding and being able to communicate that then to your clients through your books, all of those sorts of things to us, it's like, oh my God, please someone be on our side.
I've talked with some very responsible breeders who are beyond frustrated that puppy mills are getting a much higher price for their puppies than responsible breeders are.
A lot of times. Yeah.
That's horrific. Mm-hmm. Horrific. Yeah.
And I think too, you know, the important part of the communication for a lot of us and something that when you're talking to your clients or to other veterinarians, helping people understand that puppies are not toasters, right?
Oh, no, they're not.
Just pick one off a shelf of the color you want and go home with it from Walmart. And while I know people get that, I think it's really hard for them to translate it fully because they want a puppy and they want it now and they want it this color and they want it with these eyes and these genitals, right? Like, it has to be a male. It has to have 1 blue eye and 1 brown eye and it has to be... Right. And so that's not how that actually works. Mm-hmm. And so helping people understand that it's important to choose a breed. You were just starting to talk about that. We can go into that a little bit more, how you talk to your clients in that way. Choose a breed and then choose a breeder. And then it's going to take a minute.
Oh, absolutely. And that breeder might not have a puppy in the current litter that's on the ground.
Right.
You might have to wait 6 months for another litter to arrive.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. that's part of the reasons when I said, you know, we try to have at least a litter each year. You know, people want a puppy. They want the puppy. They don't want to have to wait 5 years to get a dog, right?
Right.
So I think we have that challenge within the responsible breeding community of having enough puppies, having a puppy when someone wants one, and being able to sell all our puppies, right? We don't want to be raising 10 German wire-haired pointers because it's a nightmare. And they never leave, right? Because you don't have enough homes. So there's this balancing act of having enough homes for all your puppies and not having all of that kind of stuff.
And I imagine if a responsible breeder doesn't have enough puppies for the number of people who want them, she'll say, I don't have your puppy now, but I can refer you to another German wire-haired pointer breeder who does a bang-up job.
Yep.
And he might have a puppy for you.
And that is exactly what we do.
Yes.
Exactly what we do. And we have our network of people within the each, you know, about parent clubs, right? So every breed has its own club.
Yes.
And so within the club, we all know each other. And we know who might have a litter and who's close to them. Or maybe somebody had an adult dog that came back, right? What we just talked about. Somebody needed to send their dog back. Now we're going to get it in good shape and rehome it.
Yes.
Maybe there's those. So lots of opportunities. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Purina is excited to tell you about the new My Purina app that lets you share with your puppy buyers. Using the app, pet owners can shop, earn points, and get rewarded for their purchases. Here's how it works. Pet owners download the My Purina app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store on their mobile device. They also can sign up for an account and access the program's features online by visiting purina.com/mypurina-app. When pet owners buy everyday pet supplies like treats and ProPlan puppy and dog food, they can scan the receipts to earn rewards. Dog toys, food coupons, tote bags, bag dispensers, smart ID pet tags, and training clickers are just some of the great items available. The My Purina app supports puppy buyers and rewards them for being a super pet parent. They can find the formula that suits their pet's unique needs and explore the train and play content library for a bonding experience with their pet. Encourage your clients to join the app that brings pets and the Purina passion together. My Purina, where you shop, earn, and get rewarded.
Speaking of parent clubs, that's where I send people when they're interested in a particular breed to find out what the health issues are within the breed. There's always going to be good information about disposition and hair coat and care and all of that. But that way you understand what the mama and papa dog should have been screened for. And that's what the responsible breeder will have documentation of.
Yep.
And American Kennel Club registration is meaningless in the sense that...
In and of itself, yes.
In and of itself. In other words, puppy mills definitely register their dogs, their puppies through the AKC.
Yep.
Whereas the responsible breeder may have done that or may be handing you a book with a lot of paperwork on everything, including how to register your puppy with the AKC.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I think is really, really important when you're talking to your clients or you're talking to people about buying a purebred dog, the parent club has the information. And the other place that I send people a lot of times is the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals.
Yes.
You can go there and you can look up Golden Retriever and it will tell you these are the recommended health screenings for this particular breed that should be done before those dogs are bred. And that is an invaluable resource.
Yes. And the name is a bit misleading. Orthopedic Foundation for Animals first came about to screen dogs for hip dysplasia.
Yep, exactly.
Which is, which results in arthritis in the hip joints in large breed dogs. But they've taken on creating a massive registry for all of those diseases yep. for the dogs, blood work, eyes, heart, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Canine Health Information Center that OFA created, it's probably been about 20 years ago, somewhere in that area, that enables breeders to test for the required things. The parent club tells them what the requirements are. They test them. And the amazing part of it is they have to release the results to get a chick number. They don't have to pass the test, but they have to release the results. And that right. has brought us so much really important information as breeders, because people want to have the number. So they'll release the results.
Yes.
Not passing results. So we have okay. more information.
Correct. So it's not just that the test was done that matters. The results of the test are what matters.
The results being released where people can find them.
And the responsible breeder should yeah. be able to show them. Because yeah. if you screened a dog prior to breeding mm-hmm. and found out lousy hips, lousy elbows, you're not going to breed that dog.
No, shouldn't be breeding it.
No, yeah. pet quality. Yep.
It's just a question of, you take a flyer, you raise up this puppy, you get it ready to start thinking about breeding it, and you go through and you do all your health screenings. And I cannot tell you how many have had to be, not a ton, but enough that have washed out over the years. Like, oops, there was that thyroid test I didn't pass, or here was.
Yes. What percentage do you think that is?
I think it depends on the breed. I can tell you in my breed, the number of dogs that I have washed in the course of 30 years for failing health clearances, half a dozen, maybe, uh-huh. which is going to be like less than 1% of puppies produced overall, right? So it's not a huge number, but it is important that it's there.
That's right. And the puppies that you are bringing up, they come from dams and sires with mm-hmm. great health clearances. Mm-hmm. It's not a guarantee, of course. As
there are no guarantees in life, honey. Mother Nature's a biatch.
Yes, it's wonderful. She can yeah. be tricky. Yeah. yeah.
She can be a little bit. But I think the important part of the conversation is that responsible breeders are testing their dogs. And if the dogs are not passing what we feel are important tests for that breed, then they're eliminating them from the
right.
And it just depends on which breed. That's different between breeds across the board. And so as you get to know your breeder, as you get to know the breed, talk to them and find out what's important to them. We talk a lot about what's your line in the sand, right? We have this conversation yes. amongst breeders. What's your line in the sand?
Yes.
It differs by breed, right?
Yes.
Certain breeds, if you eliminate whatever it is, X, Y, or Z, you will have no more dogs to breed. And so you have to work.
Cavalier, with King Charles Spaniels, for example.
Cavaliers are working really hard on their heart problems. And so what we've been able to do with health testing, what it has done for breeders, is make it so that we can use these dogs that are perhaps carriers of a genetic situation, but not affected. And if you breed a carrier to a clear, you're never going to have an affected dog, and you don't lose the important genetics that are represented so that you have enough genetic diversity so that you can help have fewer health problems, yeah. right? Yeah. So it's this, yeah. it's a whole package that, yes. that when you're working with a responsible breeder to understand that they're working towards a specific goal.
Right. They have to be passionate about the breed to want to do that.
Yep.
And that's what you're going to find out if you pay them a visit.
Yes.
Are they passionate? Oh, the other criteria that I always mention is you should ask the breeder if raising puppies is her only job. And exactly. Because responsible breeders, unless they're independently wealthy, they just don't make enough money. It's sometimes a matter of how much you lose.
Yeah.
They don't make enough money to support themselves with breeding dogs.
Sometimes we manage to break even. Those are like, if you take it over the really long course of events, you could.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, there aren't as many, like my mom didn't work outside the home. So she was able to spend all her time with puppies. But there are not very many families anymore who can afford to have a single income household.
That's correct.
So we're all just kind of doing the best we can, running in circles.
But if you ask a breeder that who's responsible, their reaction should be very much like yours was.
Right.
A laugh, a guffaw.
Right. Seriously? Okay. So talk to us a little bit. One of the other books that you had, I was kind of scanning through your bio real quick. The one about Spot, talking to your vet. What was that one called? Now it's gone.
There's a couple of them.
Speaking for Spot.
Yes.
Oh my God. I thought that was so smart. How to advocate for your dog. Because again, I mean, I talk to veterinarians all the time, right? Like that's kind of my day job these days, but not everybody is comfortable with that. So talk to us a little bit about that advocacy for how you advocate for your dog, that you're talking to people so that they can talk to veterinarians. I think that's a fantastic one.
Yes. It's often a matter of really empowering someone to get past what we call the white coat intimidation factor. Mm-hmm. Don't place your veterinarian up on a pedestal. There should be two-way conversations. Mm-hmm. Gone are the days of paternalistic care, where the veterinarian, much like Marcus Welby, will say, this is what you should do. I think you should put your dog to sleep. Let's do this medication without discussing options. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you're going to be an advocate for your dog if you are in a relationship, what we call relationship-centered care, where it's a back-and-forth conversation, where the pros and cons of all the options are spelled out, where cost is taken into consideration and affordability. A classic example in my mind, I've seen so many situations where people have waited way, way, way too long to get a second opinion for their dog. To the point that it took the life of the dog prematurely. Mm-hmm. And when I talk to people about why they didn't ask for a second opinion, when they tried this with their veterinarian, tried this, they did five different things, the dog was getting worse instead of better. The number one answer is I didn't want to hurt my veterinarian's feelings.
Oh, interesting.
It is. It's so common. And my comeback line to that always is, what's more important, your dog's health or your veterinarian's feelings? So that's a classic example of standing up, putting on our big girl, big boy pants, and interacting with our veterinarian on behalf of the dog. I like to state that it's a team effort, but you, the owner of the dog, you're the team captain. And so you get to guide the team. Mm-hmm. And that means understanding a lot of things, which means asking a lot of questions, mm-hmm. reading from reputable sources. But I think it's much like people. We all need medical advocates for ourselves or become our own medical advocate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the dog can't advocate for itself. So somebody's going to have to do it. I just thought you had a whole book on that. I'm like, that is just genius.
Thank you.
To help people really kind of get the concept that you can. So then my follow-up to that is, many of us as responsible breeders spend an awful lot of time, like me, with veterinarians. And we have kind of an understanding of things. And so when we talk to a veterinarian, what is the best way to talk to the veterinarian without the veterinarian feeling as if we are know-it-all trying to tell them what to do? Do you know what I'm saying? Like that can be a really common first response.
Right. And something that I really recommend, well, one, maintain respect, right? Be respectful, be grateful, be gracious, bring cookies, bring flowers, all of that.
Yes.
All of that. But the first thing is to, I know you come in with your list of questions either on paper or in your head and your ideas of what you think it is and what you might do to treat it, because you've been through this, been there, done that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I recommend is very active listening. It's sort of like if I wasn't listening to you and all I was doing was thinking about what I'm going to say next, I'm not really soaking in what it is that you're saying. So hear your veterinarian out and really listen carefully. And then ask your questions. And if you're going to surf the internet, be a responsible surfer. And there's guidelines for mm-hmm. doing that. Mm-hmm. Anecdotal information about,
Google is not a thing, man.
No. But if you are going to use Dr. Google, and we all do, I recommend plugging in the name of the condition, cardiomyopathy, veterinary college, cardiomyopathy veterinary school, so that you are getting information from a veterinary college or veterinary school. And that's going to, 99 times out of 100 be reliable information.
Yeah.
And if options aren't provided, it's fine to ask, what other options do we have? And if you have a working relationship with a veterinarian, they know what you're capable of. So they may say, yeah, well, you can give subcutaneous fluids at home. That's what we should do. Dog doesn't need to be here for that.
Right. Those are all really great. I am fortunate now. I've been in the same place for a while, and I've had the same veterinarian for 14, 15 years now. But man, the times that I've had to find a new vet in a new location.
Yes. Yes.
Not my happy place, man. Not my happy place.
Especially a young veterinarian, who's maybe never seen the light.
Yeah.
Yes.
God love them.
Yes.
I encountered one in a different space. I was working for a different company doing some things, and they brought in this young man, and he assured me that no veterinarian is ever friends with any of their clients. And I'm like,
oh no.
What planet are you from, buddy?
This is not an actual fact.
This is
right.
You might not be friends with anyone, but that says more about you than it does about anybody else.
That's right. And my best pet sitters are people who have been clients of mine.
Right.
And it's because I've seen them in action. And I know that if I'm ever reincarnated as a dog, I want to be in their homes.
Yes, exactly. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, man.
But a lot has to do with delivery. In other words, rather than saying, hey, I've had 5 dogs with this, and, approach it with, hey, what about this? Have you seen this work? And then maybe, I've had some dogs with that, and it seemed to work, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes we get kind of, I know I can be accused of this, and I know other breeders well enough to know we get really focused, right?
Yes.
And we're like, we're worried, or we're, whatever. And a lot of us can come off a little harsh. So I think that's another piece of advice out there into listener land. Slow your roll, people. Slow your roll.
Some veterinarians may not be on board with some things that breeders might request. For example, medical treatment of pyometra.
Right.
A general practice veterinarian may be inexperienced with that. But then you probably know which veterinarian to go to for this problem, which veterinarian to go to. And we all do that, right? If I have a knee problem, I don't go to my primary care doctor. So we all have a team of doctors that we work with. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Okay. Well, Dr. K, thank you so very much. I really appreciate you coming and joining us and sharing some of your fantastic work with the audience and everybody out there. Check it out. There's some pretty good resources out there for you. So thanks so much.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.